Well, looking back just over this past week, and really the past month or so, starting with the past week, the issue going into this week is we've got the Fed meeting on Wednesday, Thursday. You know, will they follow the lead that we saw from the Bank of Canada and the European Central Bank last week, where both of those central banks lowered their interest rates by 25 basis points? The Bank of Canada was at 5% and came down to 4.75%. And for the deposit rate, the ECB was at 4% and came down to 3.75%. The short answer is no, the Fed won't follow. Neither will the Reserve Bank in, not this week, but the following week. And the reasons are that demand is running too strongly in those economies, and still there's a stickiness in the inflation rate, which is there in places like Canada and Europe, but it's to a much higher degree in the US and Australia. So taking the US first, just the data over the past week, it's still pretty strong economic readings on balance. There's the odd weak one. So when we're looking at the odd weak one, for example, the manufacturing sector there is quite soft. We had the May ISM manufacturing PMI came out. It came down to 48.7 from 49.2. That's a bit weaker than expected. And is below 50, which is the expansion contraction marker for that. But if we go to the much larger services sector, we had the non-manufacturing ISM came out, and the non-manufacturing ISM went all the way up to 53.8 from 49.4. That's into strong territory, and that accounts for about 90% of the economy. So that part's very, very strong. Also, we've still got that strength and tightness running through the labour market, and so we can see it in weekly initial jobless claims. Been away for 5 weeks, and they're still in the 220,000s, so they're still in strong territory on a monthly basis. True, it's 229,000 for the most recent week from 221,000, but that's consistent with strong non-farm payrolls, and that's exactly what we got when we saw the May non-farm payrolls report on Friday. Non-farm payrolls were expected to be up by 182,000. They were up by 272,000. Very, very strong. And also, wages are still running pretty hot. So we had May average hourly earnings that came out with that report. They were expected to be up 0.3% month on month. They were up 0.4%. As a result of that, annual wage growth has lifted to 4.1% from 3.9%. So that's uncomfortably high as far as the Fed's concerned. True, the unemployment rate ticked up one notch to 4% from 3.9%, but the Fed really needs an unemployment rate somewhere north of 4.5% to be a container on wages as they go ahead. The other thing that caught my attention too was several of the Fed districts, they do these preliminary reads for what they think the next GDP read will be, and that's the Q2 GDP. They put in lots of data that comes through on a regular basis, and it gives them some measures. So we had the Atlanta Fed preliminary Q2 GDP indicator, and that had been sitting at 1.8% annualized earlier. That's now at 2.6%. So we've actually got some acceleration running through expected GDP growth running through the US. No signs of recession in sight in the US. The economy is still doing actually pretty well. And so that is also a pressure point for the Fed. Moving into this week, it's pretty short on data, but we do get the CPI comes out for May, and it's just before the Fed meeting. The Fed meets over Wednesday and Thursday, and the May CPI is expected to be sticky. Yes, they think it'll only be 0.1% month on month, but that's enough to hold the annual rate at 3.4% year on year, remembering that the Fed's target is 2 for the CPI. The core CPI, they're looking at 0.3%, 3.5% year on year there. It was 0.3%, 3.6% year on year the month before, so not a lot of joy in terms of inflation really coming back in the US. And over the last few months, mostly it's been drifting upwards, that annual rate. So we go into the FOMC meeting, and it looks as if the Fed will still leave The funds rate at 5.5%. And the issue is whether there's any room for them to really give much hope that they might think about bringing rates down perhaps in September or a bit after that. And on what we've seen over this past week, probably not a lot of hope in that. And we'll get some further clues in what they call the dot points, the Fed governors and presidents, their estimates of where interest rates will be over the next 1 and 2 years. And they're hovering over the next 2 years around the four-ish mark. So even when the Fed does start to lower rates, there's not much room to bring interest rates down very far. So still, on balance, this fairly well-supported, quite high interest rate environment persisting. Beyond the Fed meeting, we get producer prices coming out. They probably won't matter because we've already had the CPI. They're slowly drifting upwards on an annual basis. And we'll get an indication of consumer sentiment, the preliminary reading for June from the University of Michigan on Friday. And if anything, that looks as if it might rise a little bit to 73 from 69.1 going back the previous week. So still a pretty firm story as far as the US is concerned. There's hope that interest rates will come down at some stage. The economy is doing well. It's very much looking like soft landing from the interest rate hikes we've had, and so that's what continues from time to time to provide support underneath the share market in the US, together with obviously the US advantages that they've got in areas such as artificial intelligence and the stocks related to that. Moving to China. And China is a struggling economy, but the data is a little bit better. So we had the May Kaixin, and that's the more reliable Purchasing Managers Index report. Both the manufacturing and the services sector reports came out. The Kaixin manufacturing PMI went up from 51.4 to 51.7. One area that China's doing very well in is obviously electric vehicles. Now, unfortunately, that's caused places like Europe and also the US to place prohibitive tariffs on imports of Chinese electric vehicles. That may slow things a little bit for China, although they're looking for alternative markets to put those vehicles into. But what it does do is it actually reinforces that sticky inflation rate in places like the US and Europe when you start to put those sorts of tariffs in place. So it's very much a sort of a two-edged sword from the countries, from the point of view of the countries imposing those tariffs. We also had the cakes in services sector PMI, and that was quite surprising. It went up to 54 from 52.5. We know that there's still underlying problems in the Chinese economy, still related to the property sector and some of the risks, financial risks are there with property companies extending to shadow banks. They haven't gone away, but this data is looking a little bit better. And it was reinforced a bit by the international trade data. They had May exports came out, and May exports were expected to lift compared with April. Back in April, exports were up 1.5% year on year. They were expected to lift about 6. They lifted to 7.6%, so that was actually a bit better than expected. But on the import side, which is a reflection more of domestic spending in China, we came back to 1.8% from 8.4% year-on-year before. This week in China, later in the week, we'll get the CPI and also producer price index. These are still running very, very low. The CPI, for example, going back to April, was up 0.3% year-on-year. The market thinks it'll be about 0.4% for the most recent month. That's comfortably low enough, if the People's Bank of China wants to tweak rates lower over the course of the next month or two. And similarly so for pipeline inflation pressure with the producer price index. Producer prices back in April were down 2.5% year-on-year. They're expected to be down 1.5% year-on-year, but still downward pressure running through those prices in China because basically they've got excess supply of goods relative to demand. Moving to Australia, there was a lot sort of happening over the course of last week. Very early in the week, we had the minimum wage decision, and they capped it this time. Yeah, we have had some very big minimum wage rises going back the last 2 years, where the Commission's decided, or Fair Work Australia's decided to push up the minimum wage by more than the inflation rate. Well, they kept it down to near the inflation rate this time. So the minimum wage will rise from 1st of July by 3.75%. They said that they were, this time, even with the big rises we've had over the last couple of years, the minimum wage is not quite back up in real terms compared with a few years ago. That's true, although we have had some big rises concentrated over the last couple of years. The reason they held it back is they have taken some notice that the ability of firms to pay, that productivity change is still pretty weak. It's only very recently there's been any sort of movement running through that. So that was one of the reasons why they capped the minimum wage. And the other reason was that they recognised a lot of low income earners are going to get a lot of benefit from other things like income tax cuts and also the various initiatives, cost of living initiatives in both the federal budget and coming through in some of the state budgets as well. So there's plenty which is going to support real household disposable income coming through from other areas, which is expected to rise over the course of the next year. So that may just be helpful in terms of keeping annual wage growth around the 4% mark for a period yet. I would say that's still too high, really, for the Reserve Bank, whilst productivity is low, when it's looking to get inflation down to 2 to 3% over the next 18 months or so. But somewhat helpful, the minimum wage decision. Also last week, we had Q1 GDP. Yes, it's softish when you look at the headline. Headline real GDP was only up 0.1% quarter on quarter, 1.1% year on year. But there were some upward revisions to earlier quarters. Previous quarter was revised from 0.2 to 0.3. Also, when you cut inside the GDP, the real story of why it was so soft in Q1 was largely the external sector of the Australian economy, exports and imports. Net exports detracted 0.9 percentage points from GDP growth in the quarter. When we're looking at domestic spending, gross national expenditure inside the Australian economy, that grew by 1% quarter on quarter. Also, one of the biggies inside gross national expenditure, which is household consumption expenditure, was not too weak. It was up 0.4%. in real terms, quarter on quarter, 1.3% in real terms, year on year. So there was some strength running through there, and we can see household disposable income, gross household disposable income, lifted by 1.1% quarter on quarter, and that's going to get stronger over the course of the next few quarters, largely because of past wage increases. And also, because of some of these cost of living initiatives, which are certainly going to help in terms of and the income tax cuts coming through from July the 1st. So if anything, we're going to bounce off this reading. And the Reserve Bank's well aware of that. So even though it looked fairly softish, it's still not recession. If anything, that might be about the softest point. Yeah, some of the other factors which lean towards that, still people are prepared to go in, get home loans to buy houses at high prices. We had April home loans data came out, and owner-occupier home loans were up 4.3% quarter on quarter. After being up 3.5% the year before, owner-occupier home loans are now up 18% year on year in value terms, and investor home loans are up 25% year on year. So, there's still a lot of strength, underlying strength running through, potential purchase for homes running through. And we heard from the Reserve Bank Governor. She was speaking to the Senate estimates, the Economic Committee there, and basically it was still a warning, and that was that, yeah, we know that we're going to have some artificial reduction in the CPI over the course of the next few quarters, and of course the biggest one there was what came through in the May budget, which was the energy relief, $300 that goes to everyone, it's not means tested at all, and that's going to be spread each quarter into people's energy bills over from July the 1st. That obviously will take a little bit out of the CPI. But she said, we're not convinced by that. You know, basically, we're looking at the underlying inflation rate, and the underlying inflation rate is still sitting at around 4. It's also worth noting that, if anything, there's been some upward drift in inflation in Australia over the last few months. The monthly CPI was at a low point of 3.4% going back to February. In March, it drifted up to 3.5. In April, it drifted up to 3.6. And that's the headline CPI. So you know, the Reserve Bank still has this problem with sticky inflation, which they mentioned. And so just watching that as we go ahead, it's not, I think, that the Reserve Bank is probably going to lift interest rates. It's actually quite a high barrier before they do that. But you know, we're stuck with this 4.35% cash rate for quite a long time to come, probably into the middle of next year. So that's the pressure point that's coming through. And things they'll be watching, there's some more of this coming out this week. We've got the latest labour force data coming out on Thursday. And going back last month, most people focused on the lift in the unemployment rate, which went up from 3.9 to 4.1%. Really, it was still quite a strong reading because you had 38,500 increase in employment, and employment still rising at 2.8% year on year. So still a great deal of strength through that. And the market expects there'll be another 30,000 increase in employment for the month of May. The labour market's not quite as tight as it was, but it's still too tight. And so if we get the 30,000 and we get the participation rate holding, which is likely after a big lift in the participation rate last month, the unemployment rate could actually come down to 4% from 4.1%. And so, yeah, that's still a pressure point there as far as interest rates are concerned. Then moving to Europe, and Europe, all sorts of things happening here. We had the European Central Bank dropping interest rates by 25 basis points to 3.75. Christine Lagarde, in her press conference, it was interesting. She was saying, what she basically said was, well, we've done one, but yeah, we're not quite sure when we'll be doing any more because there's still a stickiness in the inflation rate. And they delivered, it wasn't unexpected, this interest rate cut. You know, people were expecting it to happen in June. But the problem is they were doing it against the most recent CPI, where there's a slight drift up in inflation to 2.6%. It was hoped that the European inflation rate would have been down nearer to 2% by the time they started cutting rates. So, yeah, the pressure points are still there. They've still got a tight labour market, and wage settlements were mentioned by Christine Lagarde. Yeah, they're still running quite high. So she was basically saying, yes, we've managed to cut because, you know, we're responding to soft economic activity, but we've still got this sticky inflation problem, and there's no guarantee what the path will be from here. So, it was a bit of a... it wasn't a sign that they're going to be cutting meeting after meeting with the cash rate. And to reinforce that, their services sector PMI came out in Europe, still very, very strong, 53.2 and 53.3. Some of that's related to everybody loving Europe this summer. So, the tourist industry is going very, very well in Europe. So that's part of the reason for some of that strength running through the services sector PMI. Manufacturing PMI also lifted a bit to 47.3 from 45.7. That's still contractionary, but not quite as contractionary as it was. Retail sales came out for April. They were a bit soft, down 0.5 after being up 0.7. And the other issue in Europe is that they've just had the European elections for the European Parliament in every EU country. And in some of the bigger ones, there's been a frightening move towards far-right parties. This was particularly so in Germany and France. And to the point in France where it's forced Emmanuel Macron to say, look, I want to sort of try and sort of cauterize this. So he's holding a parliamentary election. That's not for him. He's the president. But there's a real risk that the far-right parties under Marine Le Pen could get into the lower house of parliament. It was a very big swing that ran through. And just on that theme, over this recent weeks, obviously an election's been called in Britain, and it's whilst it looks as if there'll be a swing towards Labour there, compared with the sitting Conservatives. The other problem there is Britain First, another far-wing right-wing party, which may garner quite a few seats. So watching these political developments in Europe, which is just starting to unsettle markets a bit too, because the far-right parties in Europe, very anti-immigration to start with, so that would reduce migration in these places, which in turn would make labour markets even tighter and potentially put all sorts of pressures in there. And the second aspect is they're highly protectionist. So another factor which could lead to inflation being very much supported really getting in the way of central banks starting to bring interest rates down. So broadly speaking, that's where it's been over this past week. The first hints of some central banks starting to bring interest rates down, it doesn't look as if they can go particularly fast, those ones that have. And the ones that haven't, there's still pressure for them to hold rates where they are for quite some time. And if anything, we have over this past month had a little bit of rallying through bond yields. That may start to run into some headwinds over the course of the next month or two, with the way that things are developing in some of these economies.